Okay. So the reservation-based enforces some sort of turn-taking mechanism amongst a group of stations, and we're considering two different flavors of that. Centralized control, which is a polling mechanism. The decisions are made by a central controller. And distributed control, a token scheme where the stations themselves decide the order in which the turn-taking takes place, okay, without the use, without having to go to some centralized location, okay. So we looked at polling last week, and we briefly introduced the concept of token rings as a token-based scheme. And so this week we'll finish off the analysis of the token rings, and then we'll move on to contention-based schemes. Okay. And the idea here is that it's a bit of a free-for-all. We don't have any turn-taking mechanism. Stations which have data to send more or less are free to transmit it. Now, there's various flavors of this which will restrict that freedom to transmit. But in general, once you have data to send, you try to transmit it. Okay. Now, the problem with this, obviously, is that potentially multiple stations will try to transmit at the same time, causing the collision of the data, and therefore the data is not successfully transmitted and will have to be retransmitted. And so we're going to look at some analysis for these contention-based schemes. What we'll see is that the analysis gets fiddly fairly rapidly, and you have to make a reasonable number of assumptions to have it to be able to obtain an analytical result. But it'll still give us some general idea of the behavior of these sorts of schemes and points of comparison for various flavors of these sorts of schemes. Okay. So last time, again, we looked at the a polling scheme, and we spent most of the time determining transmission delays. So how long does it take from the time a packet arrives in the system until it is allowed to be transmitted to its destination? Okay. So again, this time we'll wrap up with our token ring schemes. And just to recap briefly, the turn-taking mechanism is in the form of a token, which can either be sort of busy or idle. If it's idle, when a station sees that token, it can seize it, it can make it busy, and transmit its data. Okay. There are a number of variants on exactly when the station releases the token now. And we'll at least touch briefly on the three flavors that are out there. In a multiple token scheme, a station releases the token immediately after it's transmitted its data. So essentially there's no delay in releasing the token. And what this means is that if you think, consider the whole ring, there can be multiple packets and multiple busy tokens cycling along, and potentially one extra free token. So it allows more than one packet and more than one token on the ring at the same time. In single token schemes, the station that sees the token does not release it until it until the token has transited around the ring. And this has the effect that there can be at most one token at a time on the ring. Potentially there can be more than one packet on the ring, but depending on how long it takes to transmit the packet, but only one token. And in single packet transmission, the transmitting station, the one that had control of the token, doesn't release the token until it's received its entire packet back again. Okay. And so, from an analytical point of view, each of these different schemes is going to introduce a different overhead or delay into the system. Okay. So, in multiple token, there's no extra delay since the token's released immediately. Again, in single token, every time the token has to go around the ring, so you've introduced a fixed delay. Well, you might think it would be fixed, but we'll discuss that in more detail in a minute. And in single packet, again, since the whole packet has to transit around the ring, it's assuredly a fixed delay. For single token, again, if your transmission time is too long, then potentially by the time the token gets back to the station, the station will still be transmitting a packet. And in that case, actually, that's good for the system because the token then gets released immediately after the packet finishes transmitting again, meaning that there's no extra overhead. So for this middle case is the hardest to deal with analytically because sometimes you have an overhead, sometimes you don't. Okay, so again, we went over these last time, so we won't do that again. And we'll just jump into analyzing the performance of token rings. Okay, so again, the main thing we're going to concentrate on is the delay experienced by a packet. So from the time it arrives in the system to when it reaches its destination, how much time is that? And as you would expect, since it's a turn-taking mechanism, the delays are going to be, the analysis is going to be quite similar to what you would have got, what you had for the polling station. Sorry, the polling systems. Again, there's slight differences. The walk times are sort of comprised of different elements. And again, depending on what token release scheme we use, there's an additional and variable amount of overhead introduced. We're going to have sort of do a trick and shove all that overhead factor into the service time of the packets in order to again make it sort of fit into the token ring format that the polling format that we derived before. Okay. So, what assumptions do we make? Similar to, again, the polling format, we have arrivals that are equally likely at any station, and the arrival process is Poisson with a rate lambda. Okay. Now, since we have a ring topology, we have to make some assumptions about how far packets are traveling around the ring from one station to another. And basically, we assume that the stations are sort of equally spaced around the ring. And in general, then the average distance between the sending and receiving station is going to be half the ring. Okay. Potentially, since the rings are unidirectional, potentially you could have to go almost all the way around the ring or only a very short distance around the ring, but we'll assume that on average it's half Okay. Again, since the stations are spaced equidistantly, if we have a total propagation time tau around the ring, that means that you have tau over F. There are M stations, you have tau over M to get from one station to the next. And again, we assume that all packets arriving have the same distribution, and we have a mean length of X bar bits, and we know the second moment of that distribution as well. Okay. And finally, like for the polling systems, whenever a station seizes a token, it transmits all of its backlog before releasing the token. Okay. So, again, essentially the same things are going on as went on for the polling networks. And so we do have where sort of the delays enter in are slightly different. Each station has a slight lag as it examines the incoming packets to determine are they a token, is there a token there or not. So we say that's B. We have the round trip propagation delay around the ring, which we already said was tau. And then we have the ring latency, which is the entire time it would take to transit around the ring, and that's a combination of the latency, and again factored in for each station, and the propagation delays. Okay. So if we define our terms cleverly enough, again, we can use the results we got from the polling network, because essentially the same thing's going on. A station has to wait its turn, and there's some amount, and the turn waiting is a combination of the walk times, or the time to transfer the token, and then the time to transmit all of the packets in the network. Okay. So we're going to use the same value for waiting time for our token ring networks. But we'll have to, again, be careful about how we define our walk time, how we define our service times, and, again, how we define our throughput. And basically, the service times and the throughput are going to have to be massaged a little to incorporate, again, the time it takes to deal with the token as well. Okay. So, again, as before, the total delay for the packet, and we've lost a couple bars on that, but the total delay for the packet is the average transmission time, the average transit time, so in general, how long does it take to go around the ring, and then this waiting time. Okay, so how long does it actually take to get transmitted from the time it arrives ready to be transmitted? Okay. Now, P The average is pretty straightforward. This is the time it takes to propagate around the ring, plus, again, any delays that are incurred within the station, so plus the station latency. Okay. So, again, at each station, there's a delay of a certain number of bits, maybe just one, but there's a slight delay at each station. Okay. And so that's the time it would take for the packet to travel all the way around the ring, would be this tau prime. But we said that on average the packet's only going to go halfway around the ring, so the average transit time is going to be t prime over 2. Okay. So that's once the packet's been transmitted, how long does it take to just physically travel from the sender to the receiver? Okay. And again, if we take all of these components, t, we want to look at the normalized delay as well, where it's normalized over the packet transmission time. Okay. Okay. So we have our tau average and our packet transmission time is, again, given. We have x bar and r. So what we need to do now is take a closer look at our waiting times. Okay. And so the two sort of factors, well, three factors really we need to look at is, again, how do we define our walk time? And then how do we define our service times? And our service times indirectly also influence our normalized throughput as well. Okay. So, again, we're going to take the walk time to be sort of a very simple term. It's just the amount of time it takes for the token to travel from one station to the next. Okay, so again, if you assume that all the stations have something to transmit, then the overhead in moving the token is just the time it takes to push it from one to the next. Okay. And so that's given by tau prime over m. Okay. You'll have one station latency factor and then just the transit time, the propagation time from one station to the next. Okay. Now we have a problem in that depending on how we release our tokens, we have additional overhead. Okay. Now, if we have multiple token scheme, then the token gets released immediately and it looks exactly like the polling network. For either of the other two schemes, there's associated with the transmission of this packet is also an extra time it takes to release the token. Okay. So in our single token scheme, that might be zero if, again, the packet is still transmitting when the token gets back around the ring, or it might be the time it takes to transit around the network. If, again, the transmission is short, if the transmission can be accomplished before the token gets back around the network, then you've got a bit of overhead time in there where something could have been transmitted but won't be. And similarly, if you look at single packet, where the whole packet has to transit around the network, then there's a fixed overhead time of you always have to go around the network. Okay. So we deal with those terms by incorporating them into the service time. Okay. So service time now is not just the amount of time it takes to transmit the packets, but also an additional factor reflecting how long it takes to release the token. Okay. And we define the term E to be the effective service time, which again factors in this overhead. We also need to use E when defining our throughput. So our throughput is dependent not just on sort of the packet transmission time, but instead on this sort of entire time it takes to deal with the packet and the release of the token. Okay. And so if we convince ourselves that this new effective service time is equivalent to our packet transmission time for the polling system, then we can go ahead and just plug in our new terms into our delay factor. Okay. So we have our delay is the transmission time plus the time it takes for the average transmission time, the average time it takes to transit around the network. And then when we go to look at our waiting time, we incorporate our new walk time into it, and we use our effective service time and our effective and the effective throughput that we get in our waiting time equations. Okay, so what do we have to do now? Now we have to take a look at what the effective service time means for each of our different strategies. And in particular, we have to calculate the first and second moments for it for our different strategies. Okay. And again, for multiple token operation, this is straightforward. There's no difference. There's no overhead because the token is released as soon as the transmission time, as soon as the station ceases to transmit. Okay. So, in this case, again, our effective service time and the second moment is the same as the service time and the second moment of the service time. So we don't have any additional work to do in this case. We get the same results, more or less, that we would have gotten for the polling networks. Okay. And as for the polling networks, we'll consider two fairly simple cases. If you have a fixed length, then the second moment is x bar squared. And if you have an exponential distribution, then the second moment is 2 x bar squared. Okay, so again, you can get terms for delay in terms of things that we know well if we assume distributions like that. Okay, essentially, as long as you know the first and second moments, you can get fixed terms for your delays. Okay. So that's the easiest case. Now, single token operation is probably the most complicated case, again, because it's going to split out into two possibilities. Again, either our transmission time, the time we take to transmit, is greater than the ring latency, and what that means is that when the token comes back around, the station is still transmitting. The station waits to release the token until it's finished transmitting. That's great. That means that we have no overhead, no additional overhead. The second case is that the transmission time is less than the ring latency, which means that the station finishes its transmission, and then at some period after it's finished its transmission, the token arrives, very specifically, after a time, the ring latency, the token comes back and is released. Okay. Now, in this case, the overhead, the wasted time, is the difference between the transmission time and this ring latency. Okay. Now, we'll define a term A prime, and A's are going to pop up all over the place, but A prime is the ring latency normalized to the packet transmission time. And so, again, we can phrase case 1 and case 2 in terms of A prime. If A prime is less than... Okay. So now, again, we're going to have to look at the specific distribution we have for our packet lengths. So again, we'll consider and what we're going to have to do is derive a distribution for our effective service time. Okay. Now, for fixed packet lengths, it's actually pretty easy. Why? Because, well, x is always constant, and so then we just decide if our packet transmission time is less than our ring latency, then we have the multiple token case, because the token gets released immediately. Okay, and we can go back to those results. If our transmission time is less than the ring latency, then our effective service time is always tau prime. It always takes tau prime to deal with our packet, okay? And so in that case, again, we can calculate our effective throughput, and this is going to be S times A prime. Okay. Now, for our delay, again, the second moment and the is straightforward enough. It's going to be tau prime squared, and so we plug in respectively tau prime and tau prime squared to the sort of various points in the equation, And we arrive at, again, delay, which is in terms of factors that we know. Okay. Now, here we introduce one other term that and this is a comparison of our throughput to our effective throughput. Okay, so and we call this our maximum achievable throughput. And so the idea is, assuming that somehow we could achieve perfect throughput normally, what penalty do we pay for introducing this overhead? Okay, and so we do that in the ratio of S to S prime. And again, if our transmission time is long enough, we don't add any additional overhead. And if our transmission time is shorter, then we add an overhead, which is 1 over A prime. Okay. And if you think about that figure, 1 over A prime, well, that's just the ratio of the packet transmission time to the entire ring latency. And that's sort of what you would expect. Again, the useful time is the time you spend transmitting a packet, and this is compared to the overall time that you have to spend transmitting this packet, which is, in this case, you have to go completely around the ring. Okay. So that's straightforward enough. The one that gets a bit hairy is if you consider an exponential distribution, again, because we can't sort of immediately decide what case we're in. Okay. So we know our ring latency. We have our mean service time. But for any individual packets, the service time for any individual packet may be less than the ring latency or greater than the ring latency. Okay. So what we say is that we're always going to take at least tau prime, okay, in the sense that either at tau prime we're still transmitting or we finished up sometime before tau prime and are having to wait for the token to come around. Okay. So what we need to examine is, so we've got this one case where our service time is less than tau prime, and again, in that case, we know that our effective service time is going to be tau prime. And then we have a second case when our service time is greater than tau prime. Okay. And in that case, we're going to split it out into two components. We certainly spent tau prime, and then we have this quantity little e. We spent a certain amount of additional time after tau prime, the time it took for the rest of the packet to be transmitted. Okay. Okay. And so now we use pretty much a property of exponentials And this is called the memoryless property, which says that if you reach some point, so if you have a conditional probability, conditional on being at some point, then the distribution from then on is also is exponential with the original mean. Okay. So in this case, we've reached, we're going to condition things on having reached tau prime, and then the distribution of E is going to be exponential with mean x bar over r. Okay. So this allows us to calculate our expected service, expected effective service time, E bar. So we always have this tau prime term, and then we have a conditional on x over r, so a conditional on our transmission time being greater than tau prime. We also have this added factor. Okay, and again, we know what the conditional distribution of E is, and so we can go ahead, so we can calculate our effective average effective service time from there. Okay, and we can keep it in either in terms of tau or in terms of A prime. So that should be tau prime or A prime. Okay. Now, the same thing applies for our second moment. We break out all the terms, and we need to calculate at some point the second moment of E squared, and we can do that using the condition, using our conditional probabilities. Okay. And so, again, we get a slightly hairy term, which we can then plug into our delay equation. And so, again, our effective throughput, we just plug in our average effective service time, and we can then compare S prime to S, and again we get an overhead term. And again, we seem to have lost the prime. That obviously should be minus A prime in the last equation. Okay. Okay, so our final mode of operation is the single packet operation. And in this case, we add a fixed overhead of the time it takes for the packet to transit around the ring. Okay, so this is quite easily dealt with. So again, you just have this extra fixed term, so that gets added onto the average. Obviously, when you square to find out the expected the second moment, you have to square E, you get the three terms in terms of either X or tau. Okay, so again, quite straightforward to do that. And again, can just be plugged into our original equation, and also the overhead can be calculated. S prime is obtained from just plugging in E bar. E bar has this additional tau prime, and that's what we see in the A prime term there. Okay, so that wraps up what we're going to say about turn-taking mechanisms. Again, they're relatively straightforward to analyze. Essentially, you just tot up the amount of time it takes sort of at point A, B, C, D, all the way around the ring. Okay. What we'll move on to now is contention-based mechanisms. And these are, in general, more difficult to analyze. We have to make a much more draconian set of assumptions about about the setups to get sort of any sort of analytical results. But they do represent a class of protocols that's still very much on the go. And again, the analysis gives you at least rules of thumb about sort of what sort of performance you can expect out of these sorts of systems. Okay. Now, if you have, if you want sort of exact performance, then, or more accurate performance analysis, then you probably have to go to a simulation approach in order to, again, relax some of the assumptions that we have to make for the analysis. But, again, in general, the analysis, it allows you to get a general idea of how the systems will behave, and it also gives you a point of comparison for various flavors of the system. Okay, so our main reference is, again, Hammond and O'Reilly, and we look at sections 6.3 and then sections 9.1 through 9.4. Okay. And again, we can skip through this. We've just been talking about reservation-based systems. And so I think it's immediately clear that contention-based systems are significantly different from reservation-based systems in their behavior. Okay, but we still are going to want to look at similar quantities for them. We're going to look, well, or we're going to concentrate primarily on normalized throughput in this case, and for certain sets of assumptions and certain setups, we'll look at the transfer delay as well. Okay. So, for history, the original protocol of this contention-based type was the Aloha protocol. And this Aloha protocol is the basis for all subsequent contention-based protocols, arguably. Okay. And the goal of this protocol was to provide radio links for distributed campuses for the University of Hawaii. Okay. And so it was very simple. If a station had data to send, it sent it. And then if the messages collided, if two stations transmitted at once, then the packets were resent at some later time. Now, this Aloha protocol was then applied to more standard wired networks, wired local area networks, and it was observed that there's sort of a difference in the character. There's one fundamental difference between the original setup and these new wired networks, or the next proposed application, and that is that for Aloha, it was assumed that the propagation time was large relative to the transmission time. Okay, so again, the packets were being transmitted a distance, and so they had a high propagation time. If you start thinking about your traditional wireless LAN, where you're hooking computers up in a building, a room, then the propagation time is much shorter, and so the propagation time is short relative. For wired networks, you can sort of assume your propagation time is short relative to transmission time. Okay. This and other factors led to various refinements for Aloha. Slotted Aloha, we'll describe it later, but basically it limited the points at which stations could start transmitting, and this had the effect of limiting the number of collisions that would occur. Okay. And then the CSMA protocols, which, again, were the ones on which Ethernet is based, and also moving on forward, a lot of the contention-based wireless access protocols are based, added, well, first of all, carrier sensing, which meant that they listened to the medium before they just blasted out a transmission. So at least they weren't going to transmit if they knew that the medium was busy. Okay. So we're going to look at a fairly simple setup. We're going to assume we have M stations attached to, again, a bus or a wired network. Okay. And if a packet collides, the receiving station, if a packet is transmitted successfully, it gets acknowledged by the receiving station. If it collides, the receiving station doesn't acknowledge the packet. And this is how the station makes this determination that there's been a collision. And the station will then try to resend that packet at some future time. Okay. And at a minimum, it had better wait your two-way propagation delay. Otherwise, again, you're just going to sort of tag on to the old collision. Okay. So it's not as easy to, say first, in these sorts of networks, it's not really easy to say first this happens, then this happens, then this happens, then this happens, as we would with a polling network where we say first station 1 transmits, then station 2 transmits, then station 3 transmits. So we have much less of a focus here on individual stations, and we end up having to look sort of at the network globally and what's happening globally. Okay. Now, we for this reason, we're going to sort of look at throughput first and foremost. And we're making, more restrictive assumptions than we did initially. And first of all, we're going to assume that our packets are of fixed length and therefore fixed time to transmit. And we're also going to lump our propagation, we're going to assume a fixed propagation time as well, and lump this entire transmission and propagation time into one single time, p seconds. So you can think of this like an effective transmission time, like we had the effective service times before. Okay. Now, we assume that our traffic has a Poisson distribution with some arrival rate lambda, and the underlying assumption for that is that this traffic represents an infinite population of infrequent users. Okay, so I drew this nice picture where we had M stations. Well, now when we go to actually do the analysis, I'm saying, no, we actually have an infinite number of stations. Okay, we'll return to that assumption, and we'll argue in a somewhat hand-wavy way that for a reasonable size of M, it doesn't matter, but it is an assumption that we're making in the setup of our model. Okay. And so S is the average number of successful transmissions per packet transmission time P. And then G is the average number of attempted transmissions per packet transmission time P. Okay. So, again, this is our normalized throughput. S is our normalized throughput. And then G is our offered load to the system. And what we can do is we can derive a value for S in terms of our offered load. Okay. So what we have to decide is what's the likelihood of having a collision. And so we look at how can a collision come about, and we'll consider our reference packet in the center here, and two possible things can happen. A collision can happen because a packet started to transmit before our reference packet, but not an entire time slot P, so not an entire transmission time before. So its transmission's continuing when our reference packet starts transmitting. Turning it around, our reference packet starts transmitting, and while it's transmitting, so it transmits for a time P, while it's transmitting, then our second packet can also start transmitting and collide.
What is the reference packet?
Sorry?
What is the reference packet?
The reference is just under what conditions will something collide with this packet? So this is the packet we're thinking, what circumstances will cause a collision with this packet? Okay. It's just that we pick a packet, any packet.
Anyway, I think it could be in between packet 1 and packet 2. Just an assumption that it's in between.
What I'm trying to convey here is, under what circumstances can there be a collision? And in what time frame can there be a collision? Okay. So if we look at, we just pick some packet, any packet, and we ask, how could there be a collision involving this packet? And a couple of things can happen. again, either there was a packet that had started transmitting before that, but not sufficiently far before it. So if that packet started transmitting anytime T minus P, or sort of after T minus P, then it's not going to finish up before this one starts. You get a collision. Or this one starts, and at some point after the time of it starts, but before it's finished, so before T plus P, another packet starts, and again, you get a collision. And what this says is that for any given packet, there's an interval of length 2P during which, if any other packet starts up transmitting, this packet is going to be involved in a collision. And so we call that interval where, if a packet starts transmitting, we'll have a collision. We call that the vulnerable period. Okay. And again, in this case, the length of this vulnerable period is 2P. If something transmits after P before our packet or before P plus P, then we have a collision. Okay. So the relationship between our throughput and our offered load is given that is S is G times the probability of a successful transmission. Okay. And what's the probability of a successful transmission? Well, the probability of a successful transmission is that no additional packets are transmitted during that interval 2P. Okay. So we want zero arrivals in that interval of length 2P. And now, our arrival process is Poisson with a rate G over P. Okay. So that gives us that the probability of no other arrivals in that interval is e to the minus 2g, and therefore, plugging in, s is g e to the minus 2g. Okay. So S is now a function of our offered load, and we can then take a look at the exact form of that function, and we can at least determine, well, what's the maximum throughput you could get with this system? And again, the maximum throughput is going to be assuming that you have a very specific offered load. Okay. And so just basic maths, the way to find a maxima is to take the derivative and set it equal to zero and solve. And doing that, we get that the maximum occurs at g is a half. And plugging that in, we get that the maximum S is 0.184. Okay. So your maximum throughput, which again is your maximum efficiency, is fairly low for this sort of a system. Okay. Now, there's an additional problem with this sort of analysis, and that is that we're assuming that the system is stable. Okay. So we're assuming that G is in some sense an average offered load, and that the S follows from that. However, and so that's, and it's, that's also all buried in this, the way we set this up, where essentially we have a constant fixed input to the system. In reality, what happens is if the offered load is greater than 0.5, then you're going to end up with your throughput decreasing, and you get into a cycle. When your throughput decreases, well, we haven't said what happens to those packets that went away and got rescheduled later, but obviously what happens in reality is that they all queue up, okay? So the greater your offered load, the lower your throughput, and then the lower your throughput, your offered load actually starts increasing. So if you start with too high an offered load just keeps increasing, and you have an unstable system. Okay. So, again, this what this says is that Aloha has a limited usefulness for fairly sparsely populated systems with low traffic requirements. Okay. Okay, well, I'll go over, I'll finish off the Aloha discussion then. We can also get sort of a rule of thumb for the transfer delay. In particular, the average number of attempts per successful transmission of a packet is given by, well, you have your offered load, and then you divide that by your efficiency. So your efficiency is the packets per second getting through. This is the packets per second that are requested, and so again, if you divide those two, that must give the number of times each packet has to be sent in order to get through. Okay. And so that gives you, from that you can determine that you have one successful attempt and then a number of unsuccessful attempts. And so the time for a successful attempt is obviously P. So it just takes P to transmit and propagate. The time for an unsuccessful attempt, well, you still have to transmit and propagate, so you have a P factor, but you also have a delay. So you've chosen to wait a certain amount of time before retransmitting. Okay, and that's just some number B. So the total amount of time is the time it takes for a successful attempt, which is P, then the average number of unsuccessful attempts, E to 2G minus 1, times the amount of time that it takes for an unsuccessful attempt, which is P plus B. Okay. And so, again, in order to go any farther with that, you'd have to sit down and analyze B, your back off, which we'll do later, but not now, not in this setup. And what we can observe, well, the best we can do is if we don't back off at all, and miraculously everything still works. And in that case, then our minimum delay is P e to the 2g. So again, you can see that the delay increases with the offered load. Okay, so I'm going to break there. We'll take about a 15-minute break. When we return, we'll discuss slotted Aloha. This is, well, it's a more efficient form of Aloha. It increases, it doubles the efficiency of Aloha, essentially. Mathematically, it's a little more tractable, so we'll have a look at a few more results, and then again, I'll discuss sort of additional improvements to Aloha in the form of CSMA as well.